You love floral design, but running a business is so not your thing. Longtime Slow Flowers member Althea Wiles has been there too. She knows how many of us started out because we love flowers, but then realize there's so much more to the business than just making pretty things. Althea joined us recently at the Slow Flowers member meetup to share her spring tune-up tips for floral businesses, and we're bringing the conversation to you today.
Marketing in general, it is a tough one, and it is very, very difficult. If you're doing events, networking, knowing the other vendors in your area is huge. That has been the most helpful. Your website really showing you and not being very generic. You need a website that definitely shows your work and your styles to really promote yourself. Knowing your vendors and having vendors that refer you and know your work is probably the most helpful thing. And then having your own websites.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing. This is episode 661. This is the weekly podcast about slow flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This show is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free online directory to more than 750 florists, shops, and studios who design with local, seasonal, and sustainable flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And thank you to Red Twig Farms, based in New Albany, Ohio. Red Twig Farms is a family-owned farm specializing in peonies, daffodils, tulips, and branches, a popular peony bouquet by mail program, and their Spread the Hope campaign, where customers purchase 10 tulip stems for essential workers and others in their community. Learn more at redtwigfarms.com. Today's guest, Althea Wiles, is the creative force behind Rose of Sharon Floral Design Studio and J. Althea Creative, based in Springdale, Arkansas. With a Bachelor of Arts degree from Hendrix College, an Arkansas Master Florist certification, and 30 years of experience, Althea orchestrates 75 to 100 weddings and events annually, receiving industry accolades and sharing and shaping a lasting legacy. As the education director of J. Althea Creative, she imparts her expertise to mentor budding florists, cementing her reputation as a visionary and influencer in the field. She annually contributes striking installations to the Art in Bloom exhibit at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, further solidifying her impact on the industry. When Althea and I were brainstorming about her presentation for the April Slow Flowers member meetup, we decided to take some of the content of her coaching sessions and distill it down to 1 hour. She has discovered that many floral pros have an abundance of creative design skills, but are juggling time on paperwork, office work, accounting, management, writing proposals, and interacting with clients, pretty much everything except design. So let's get a jolt of inspiration and some tangible tips to bring back to the shop, studio, and flower farm. I'm so happy to share the audio from our April 12th meetup for you today. Let's jump right in and get started. Hello, everyone. We're letting our guests in from the waiting room to the April Slow Flowers member meetup. So welcome, everyone. I'm Deborah Prinzing, founder and creative director of Slow Flower Society, and this is our April meetup. I'm so excited that we can talk about, I don't know, something that I think relates to everyone is like we do spring cleaning, but in our businesses, we do spring tune-up. So welcome those of you who are here. We've got a few more people waiting in the waiting room that I'll try to keep an eye on and let in. And this session will be recorded, so we'll be able to post it sometime next month for people to listen to it and watch it. And I want to welcome you, Althea. Thank you so much for agreeing to be our expert guest today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so thrilled that we can do this. Just by way of background, we just figured out it was back in 2019. I got this crazy idea of doing 50 states of slow flowers so that every week on the podcast, we had a state focus. And at the time, we only had one member in the state of Arkansas, and it was Althea. So I convinced her to be my guest. And we were just saying how long ago that feels. Lots has changed, right, Althea?
It has, yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, but it was fun. So I'll share that link also if anyone wants to go back and listen. Nan Madison of Queen City Flower Farm is also on that episode, and she's a longtime Slow Flowers member. So people will love to hear both Nan's interview and then the state spotlight. As people are coming in, though, I want to just also mention that Althea is, as I said, a longtime Slow Flowers member. We really only know each other virtually and through things like this. But she had told me that she started a separate consulting business, J. Althea Creative. And her business really does a lot of one-on-one coaching with other floral business owners. And it made me realize that this would be a great opportunity to share her story and for maybe share with the community just some great tips and observations. I mean, you can't only do so much in 30 minutes, Althea, but I do think that it's a perfect job for you because you've told me you've been in the floral business for 26 years as of next week, and that you also have done it all. So you can relate to anybody's situation. So I'd love to have you just tell us where you are in Arkansas, what kind of situation Rose of Sharon Floral Studio is now, Floral Design Studio. And then what are some of those other iterations you've lived through as a florist?
Sure. So I am located in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which is just south of Rogers in the Bentonville area, the headquarters of the Walmart home office. So we've got a lot of large corporations like that around here. Fayetteville itself is a little bit smaller, a little bit more hometown, although we're growing incredibly quickly right now.
Is there a university there or?
University of Arkansas is okay. Here in Fayetteville. So yeah, I consider myself still from Fayetteville, although I'm currently located in Elm Springs, which is a small subdivision of the town just north of Fayetteville, Springdale. It's called Springdale. We've got sort of a corridor of cities here. I've lived in the Fayetteville area pretty much my whole life, except for college. And I started as a florist when I was in college. So I volunteered at a flower shop over spring break and worked for them for the full spring break. And then they gave me a part-time job. And I was super lucky because they had a previous owner that had just recently retired, but he hadn't actually left the shop. So he took me under his wing and mentored me. At the time, he'd been in the business about 30 years, and I was just amazed at all the information and all the knowledge he had. And then here I am now. I've been in the business for 30 years and trying to do some of the same things and give back some of that same type of mentoring energy that he gave me. Currently, I have a freestanding studio. It's not located at my house. It's not in a shopping mall or a strip mall. It is in a very small town, and it's literally in the middle of a field. It used to be a hairstylist, and so it's just this building that they built to be a hairstylist, and then he retired. But what that allows me to do is set my own hours, not have to have somebody in the shop when we go do event setups. Like yesterday, we had a corporate event set up and we were gone for 3 hours. So we were able to put a sign on the door and just go do that instead of having to have somebody there. Most of our business comes through our website or phone calls, or it's event oriented. We're about equal splits between weddings, corporates, and everyday design. But because I'm not in a strip mall or in a busy area for retail, I can do a more custom setup for me. So we're actually open 8:30 to 3:30 and then as needed on the weekends. But in the past, I have worked out of my home in a home studio. I've worked at a traditional brick and mortar in a strip mall on the main street of another small town. I had a It was more like a studio, but I had more regular hours. It was actually in a small airport for a while. Wow. And then I originally started in my house. So I've had a couple of home studio stints when I first started, and then just recently through COVID. Very different experiences. When I started 30 years ago, nobody had internet, nobody had web, and you were considered almost not legitimate if you worked out of your home. And now it's absolutely perfectly fine to have a home studio. So that's sort of my background and my history. After COVID and during that period, I started doing the consulting. And I've had a couple of apprentices that actually have small shops in this area. So they have come in, worked for me as apprentices while they were building their own business. And then I do online consulting as well. And that is anything from teaching you how to price or how to track your invoices and your inventory to just being somebody to ask questions of, because you don't want to ask them in the Facebook groups where you get beat down sometimes.
The privacy of a one-on-one coaching. I hadn't thought about that. You know, it just makes me think of a quote I had have just recorded for a profile I'm writing about a flower farmer who said, "I got into this because I love plants, not because I wanted to be a business person." And I'm sure you hear that a lot. Like, mm-hmm. We love flowers, we love beauty, we love pretty, but oh, we have to keep the books. I mean, is that kind of what you're encountering with some of your clients?
That is exactly who I try and help. The people that really love floral design, started a business because it seemed like the right thing to do so they could be creative in their own way, and then realize that, yes, you still have to do the book work, still have to take care of the customers, do all the paperwork. I'm sort of lucky. I'm 50-50 right brain, left brain, so I can translate between the two. And I enjoy doing things like spreadsheets and databases, as well as, you know, keeping records and things like that, as well as designing. So the people that have been doing the design and realize that they need help with the business side of it are exactly the people that I want to work with.
Wow. Well, before we jump in and have you just walk us through your little presentation, I just have to ask, what did you major in college that made you get this like part-time job at a flower shop? And like, did you abandon some other big dream to do this? Was there a conflict there?
I did not have any super big dreams. I majored in sociology and I loved studying it, but there was absolutely nothing I wanted to do in the sociology field past just studying it. So I really enjoyed that part of it, but I did not want to do anything with it. And I looked into working at the flower shop. It was just a situation where my spring break plans fell through. And so I was like, I'm going to go volunteer. All the things we hate hearing now. But I was lucky to find somebody that said, sure, yeah, come on in.
Oh, my goodness.
He forgot to tell his employees that I was coming. And so I showed up and they were like, okay, here's how you make a bow. And they had me make bows all day because every single rose dozen at that time that went out of the store had a big bow on it.
Yeah. And you're like, this is what I'm going to college for.
Yes. No. But so I got my degree, but I didn't do anything with the sociology degree beyond just working with people all the time.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so valuable. I love that. You know, there was something that prompted you to go volunteer at that flower shop, and it was your future self saying, you know, maybe this is an industry that I really love. So that's exciting.
My parents also had a nursery, but I absolutely do not have a green thumb and I hate working in dirt. I don't like the feel of the dirt on my hands. So I would go cut their flowers and play with the flowers when I was growing up, but I just could not grow anything. So that probably had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, maybe it skipped a generation. Okay, well, I've given you permission to be able to put up your PowerPoint. And Althea has like maybe 20 minutes or so of slides, 25. We've got plenty of time. And then we'll have, you know, at least 20 minutes for questions afterwards.
Okay. So while I'm going through this, feel free to jump in and ask a question. I don't mind interruptions at all. I just have a few tips and things that we try and do each year in our studio or each season really in our studio to keep on top of things so it never gets overwhelming. My name is Althea Wiles, and I am actually an Arkansas Master Florist and Professional Certified Florist. Those are the two things that I've actually gotten certified in, but I've done lots of other training throughout the years as well. I just haven't gone through the process to do things like AIFD or anything like that. Make sure, let's see, here we go. I wanted to give y'all some different tips on ways of keeping organized and keeping on top of things in three different areas: the office, the studio or the shop, and then also a few tips from Mother's Day since that's coming up. First of all, in the office, the area that everybody hates the most, I wanted to start with that just to get that sort of out of the way. And at this time of year, it's really good to focus on some of your paperwork things. So updating your branding, making sure that you have enough of your business cards and labels, anything that might have your brand on it. It's really good to do to make sure you have enough for the upcoming busy season. That way you're not scrambling to find business cards for Mother's Day, or if you're meeting new venues or other professionals, you always have those things with you. One of the things that we do as well is a branded sheet. It looks sort of like my background right now, that comes from No Issue Tissue, and they are a sustainable packaging place, so you can get labels and branding and things like that. Also, it's really good to finish any paperwork that you might have outstanding at this time, especially right before Mother's Day. So this would be things like making sure your taxes are filed, which the due date is Monday, or at least you have your extension done, closing out any files for events that you've already done for the year so that those aren't sitting there. I like to make sure that I've got all of my profits figured out for each event that we do, make sure that my receipts are filed for each month so it's not piling up throughout the year, paying my sales tax, that type of thing, before it gets too close to a really busy time. So for us this year, we have, I think, 18 events between yesterday and June 2nd plus Mother's Day. So I spent the last 2 weeks going through these things. I made sure every single tax that I needed to have paid was paid. All of things were caught up. Everything was filed neatly. There's nothing on my desk right now that is not for an upcoming event. Everything that's passed is out of the way. Accounts reconciled, anything like that. Also in the office area that's really important to stay on top of is your pricing and your profits. So if you track your pricing and what you're paying for flowers as they come in, and if you adjust your prices with each shipment, this you sort of do this as you go. A lot of people tend to just like set a rose price and keep it for the full year, but our prices have been going up a lot lately. So it's a really good time to review what you've been spending on flowers, what the current prices are before the Mother's Day price spike hits, but reviewing those and making sure that what you're setting your retail prices for is accurate still, so that you're making the profit margins that you need to make to be financially sustainable. This also goes for your standard recipes. So if you use a standard recipe for certain arrangements or even things like a dozen roses, going through that recipe with your new prices and making sure that your profit margins are where you want them to be for your shop and your studio, so that as you get into these busy seasons, you're not losing money. That's super important. One of the things I've found is that roses are actually pretty hard to make the industry standard profit margin on, even though they seem like they're a very simple design. Because there's not much to that, it's difficult to make it look pretty without adding lots and lots of material. And so that's an easy place that you end up losing profit if you're not really careful and sticking to your recipes. But it's good to review all of those recipes. And finally, which I already slightly spoke about, is the recipes themselves. Reviewing any templates, like for us, we have a new baby arrangement that's pretty generic. It's hydrangeas, roses, carnations, a few specialty depending on what is in season. But we make sure that all of those templates are up to date before we go into a busy season, and we change those out seasonally as well. So we'll review what's available and what our substitutions are, so that my designers know that if something is not in the studio, that they can use something else without having to do the recalculations and it's still profitable. The other thing is making all your recipes and all your orders for any upcoming events. So like I said, we had 17 or 18 events plus Mother's Day. I have already created all of our recipes for each event and placed my order with my wholesalers for everything through June 2nd, so that I don't have to worry about it when I'm in the middle of this. I'm not trying to switch between the design side of my brain and the paperwork side of my brain. Everything is done and out of the way, so that now all we do is design from now through June. In the shop, you get to focus a little bit less on the paperwork, get out of that side of your brain and start working on things that are a little more creative. But there are still a lot of things that need to be taken care of, like maintaining your delivery vehicle. Make sure you do that before it gets busy. This is one that I actually missed a little bit this year, and I realized I need to take it in and get a couple things done before it gets busy, and I don't know when I'm going to do it now. But oil changes, tire rotations, new tires, new windshield wipers, all those little maintenance things that build up. And this is especially true if you have a driver that handles your vehicle and you're not in that vehicle all the time, which is what happened to us. I wasn't paying attention and didn't realize that I have a brake light out. So we need to make sure that those types of things are taken care of before you get in a crunch where you can't afford to be without your vehicle for a few days if something does happen to it. Also your tags, make sure your tags are up to date or you know when they are due, so that when that happens, you're not letting those expire. Cleaning your coolers, not fun, but necessary to keep your flowers living as long as possible. And I know not all studios have coolers, and it sort of depends on where you are. I'm in the South. We pretty much have to have a cooler unless you want 100% just do events. And even then, it's really helpful because we get days that are 95, 100 degrees and very high humidity. And it is difficult to keep flowers in the prime spot in those conditions without a cooler. So if you have a cooler or a cool room or a space where you keep the flowers, deep cleaning those before it gets busy, sweeping, mopping, sanitizing, pulling everything out, wiping down the shelves, making sure all your buckets are clean. Just remembering to do those types of spring cleaning tasks will help your flowers live quite a bit longer. And if you're doing retail deliveries, that's incredibly important because you do want your flowers to last a week or even week and a half to 2 weeks. I had some of my Valentine's Day roses. Somebody sent me a picture 11 days after Valentine's Day and every rose was still standing upright. I was actually amazed by that one. But it is because we do these maintaining tasks, like we clean our coolers after every big event and before every big season as well. And then your supplies. So cleaning out your toolboxes, making sure you have things in the toolboxes that you need. We actually keep a list, and after every event, we go through the list and restock our toolboxes, sharpen any tools or pull out tools that aren't in good condition, cleaning those tools as well. If you don't tend to do those that immediately, making sure that they are nice and clean, nice and sharp, and you have the appropriate ones with you. Reorganizing and tidying ribbons and other supplies that tend to just sort of explode on you and get messy. Spending some time, it feels like a busy task, but it does make you much more efficient if you know where everything is. And it also ends up saving you money, because when you're in the middle of lots of events or a big event and you're looking for that one specific shade of lavender ribbon, you know right where it is rather than going to buy it again and ending up with 3 or 4 or 6 rolls of the same ribbon because you forgot where you put it last time. And then checking your supplies that you can order in bulk and get a better price for that aren't going to go bad. So your glue, your tape, your prom supplies, if you do prom, any of those types of things that you can save money by ordering more. When I'm buying my Oasis cold glue, I will buy the full case at a time. I don't need that much glue very often, but I'm not going to run out, and I get a savings because I bought that many at once. So going through labeling where things are and organizing, putting all your like things together is really important to help you be prepared to go into a very busy season. And then, of course, we have Mother's Day coming up. And I don't know, do y'all do a lot of Mother's Day, or is everybody here, are y'all mostly event focused?
I think we've got a good mix of people who, I'm assuming everyone's got something going for Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. Even if it's someone like Misty, who's in Alaska, who's selling gift certificates. So
it's a day that's hard to pass up as a florist, I think. Although I do have one friend that hates it so bad she leaves the country so that she doesn't have to worry about
it. That's a little extreme.
She really does not like working the big holidays. She is more of event focused. And so that she doesn't even have to answer the phone, she takes a vacation every year at Mother's Day.
That's funny.
So Mother's Day, all the things that I've talked about are still true, but even more in depth. So things like making sure you have your recipes completed, but then you also have enough of all the vases that you want to use, that you have those organized and cleaned. You have the labels taken off, that greasy film that comes in on some of the vases, those are washed. Pricing. We take an index card, write the name of the vase and the price, the retail price, drop it in one of the vases so that anybody that's freelancing for me knows how much that vase is without having to look it up for them. Sorting ribbons, like if you're only going to use certain colors for Mother's Day, pulling those out, throwing those in a box so that they are just your Mother's Day ribbons. Or if you do make bows, making those bows ahead of time. Anything that is used, having a price on it so that your freelancers and your designers know immediately what it is. Again, so that you're not the bottleneck of having to answer those questions, which is super helpful when you are tired. And if you are more creative oriented and you're being the person that everybody is asking questions of, that can be really fatiguing to be that person there. Just like our brides and our grooms here in the South, it's almost always the bride that is the bottleneck, but all the questions will come to that one person. And if it can be somebody other than the main focus of the event, it's a lot easier on everybody. Same thing in your shop. If you need to be a designer, have somebody else that can answer the questions, but also have everything that can be labeled and priced. Creating recipes. And I know a lot of people don't like creating recipes or don't know how to create a good recipe that works for when you have substitutions. But creating those recipes, and that can be as simple as this arrangement has one mass flour and three filler flours and five medium-sized mass flowers like a rose or a carnation. That's a recipe. It doesn't have to say five lavender roses and three spray roses. It can be very generic, but having that recipe created and printed, one, it lets you order your flowers ahead of time. Two, it prevents the fatigue from when you've been designing and you've been staying up late trying to figure out how to design, because you can just look at that recipe and follow it. Also, keeping your descriptions on these pretty vague for when you're selling is helpful. That way, for example, if you have a recipe that calls for blush roses and white stock and lavender carnations, and you can't get those, or your wholesaler sends you something else for Mother's Day, you can switch that and do blush carnations and lavender stock and white roses, because your description said a pastel arrangement. It didn't say those specific colors and flowers. Your recipe can have that, but the front end, the customer only knows pastel. And that will mean you don't have to call your customer and say, we have to make a substitution. It also lets your designers know what substitutions they can make without having to ask how to rework this recipe. And it helps you when you're tired with figuring these things out. Wrong way. And then finally, after Mother's Day, rechecking your inventory, restocking things, reorganizing, and sort of going through that prep work again, cleaning out your coolers, making sure you do a deep clean on those. At the end of a busy time, Mother's Day or wedding season or any of your major holidays, just sort of resets everything. And while it might not be in the spring and it's not a spring cleanup and tune-up, it will help you reset and get back to where you can start over and do this for the next time. So, and then I just had a few little pictures. I was looking through for this presentation. I found some of the pictures that we have used over the years. So these are the boxes that we use to deliver our flowers in. And we do that for all of the holidays. It makes it easier on our drivers, and it gives a good brand presentation for our customers. This is our main supply closet. This was before reorganization, and this was after. It's a tiny little room, and we have maximized every square inch of wall space for our vases and containers. But you can see it just gets messy very easily. We put things right in the middle and we just leave it. And Olivia actually told me today we need to reorganize our closet soon because it's back to this state. But there, you can get in there. We can get a lot of stuff in that little bitty room when we keep it tidy. These are how I color code for Mother's Day. So each day gets a colored dot so that my driver can see specifically, okay, the blue dots are Saturday. If it's got a yellow dot, it doesn't go today. The red dots are for add-on. So anything that has a chocolate or a chocolate-covered strawberry gets that red dot so that they remember to pick it up from the studio, but also make sure they hand it to the person as well. These are what we use to keep our tools organized. And this is just it's actually a picnic caddy that holds napkins, forks, knives, and spoons. And it's perfect for holding all your tools. And everybody has a little bamboo caddy on their desk for their specific tools. We also put our initials on all our tools so nobody steals each other's, which helps us a lot. We're a little particular about that. So, and that's really it. Those are the tips that I had. And I am happy to answer questions.
That's wonderful. That was great. Super helpful. And some of the things that you brought up are, you know, not even on my radar. So really helpful to think about. Could you talk before we open up to the questions? And I'm encouraging everyone else to type their questions in the chat. How do you handle sourcing? Because obviously local flowers are probably not available until later in the year in Arkansas. What's your season for getting product from local farmers?
So it's actually just starting. We basically have local product when our farmers markets are open, which is April through first frost, hard freeze, really. So late October, early November. Valentine's Day, I can't get anything local.
Right.
It's pretty much all non-local. For Mother's Day, I make the list of what I want to use, and then I start contacting my local people to see what they have first and source those. So I will be getting all of my peonies locally this year. I think they will have, what did they tell me? Peonies, Orlea, Scabiosa, I think we'll be starting possibly some Lysianthus. I have the list written down of what they specifically, I know the peonies because I got an amazingly good price this year on my peonies.
Well, everyone wants peonies for Mother's Day, yes. So that's wonderful.
She's like, I can give you a bulk price discount. I was like, yes, sign me up.
So you're kind of in like a hybrid situation because you're a full service florist. You offer local flowers when you can.
When I can.
How are you sourcing otherwise? When you said you're talking with a wholesaler, where's the closest wholesaler to you?
So I have one that is about an hour south of me in Fort Smith. And then I've got two that are 2 hours north of me in Springfield, Missouri. And I don't have any refrigerated trucks that come by. I pretty much have to order just over the phone with them. I use Mayesh to look at pictures if I need to. I've done it long enough that I know what I like to use. So it's rare that I need to go find new items. I will email a list for a wedding, I'll email a list to that wholesaler of what I want and what day I want it delivered. With the local flowers, this is where being vague comes in really handy as well, because they can't tell me even this far out for Mother's Day exactly what they're going to have. So I've built into my recipes that we can use A, B, or C, and they're all going to be about the same price. And I know I can get at least one of those from my local people. We actually have a new company that's trying to start a collective here in Fayetteville. So I'm really excited to see that come together. And I'm working with her to help get that organized a little bit. And if that happens, then getting our local flowers will be much easier, because we won't have to contact all the different farms. We'll be able to contact just her, and she can source from the different farms.
Yeah, someone who
can. But yeah, right now it really is. You find the people that you work well with that either will deliver or you can pick up from. And I start with them and then work out from there. So then my wholesaler in Fort Smith, who orders flowers from California, Alaska, and South America mostly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I try and stay as close as possible, but sometimes, especially with weddings, especially we don't have any rose growers here. I have to outsource that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have, did you talk about the markup that you tend to use for your shop? Are you willing to share that information?
Sure. No, I'll absolutely share that. So the industry standard for sustainable pricing is 3.5 times markup on your fresh materials, 2.5 times markup on your hard goods, and a labor charge of anywhere from 25% to 35% usually. Once you know your numbers, then you can sort of massage those numbers a little bit to see what markup works specifically for your shop and your business. I tend to do between a 3.5 and 3.75 markup on my fresh, and between a 2.25 and 2.75 for my hard goods, with a 25% labor markup. And that labor markup covers your design time. And the way I generally explain it is, yes, you might be the main designer all the time and you might feel funny charging that. But if you get sick or break your arm or cannot design, you have to pay somebody. And that is what covers their paycheck.
Mm. So is that for like just simple math, like a $2,000 elopement order or small wedding order or something like that, then 25% of that would be $500. So that would be the design fee. Is that, and that is sort of added on to that or built into that?
If you're doing the math correctly in your head, because I always get the calculator out.
Someone please correct me if I'm wrong. But
so I usually look at it like this. If my flower costs $1, I'm going to charge, if somebody pulls it out of the cooler to sell it, it's going to be $350 to $375.
Right.
If I make up an arrangement and my fresh materials came to $40 and my vase is $10. That's $50 in material. And then I would add 25% to that for my design. So if my calculations as I'm talking are correct, it's turns out to be $66.67.
Okay. So that's the add-on to consistently build the labor cost in to the retail price for the customer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's really helpful.
That is the fee for your artistic ability, your knowledge, your skill. It is what is paid for you designing. It is not the price that they are paying for the flower itself. It's the creation, just like a chef who creates something. They have their raw ingredients. They have the ingredients that could be sold, and then they have their creation, and it is the part for the creation.
Yeah.
And it's different also from delivery and setups. If you have a wedding or event, that is an additional charge.
Yeah. And you put those line items in the proposal so the client knows how everything is spent or not.
No, I will put, generally when I'm doing a proposal, I'll group it by category. So my personal flowers, my ceremony flowers, et cetera. And then I have, and that would be, so personals would be bridal, bridesmaids, boutonnieres, corsages. I do on the back end have a set price for each of those that includes that design labor fee. At the end of the proposal, I have a services fee that shows my delivery and my strike fees. But that design fee for each, like the bridal bouquet, is not shown.
It's
just
in.
A it is included in the price of that piece.
Okay, great. Well, Laurel from Laurel's Flower Farm and Floral Design has a question. Do you have a minimum amount that couples need to meet for weddings? And if so, do you mind sharing what your minimum is and possibly what your minimum was when you got started? And then she just kind of asked about delivery and setup fees. So maybe you could talk about, like, how do you calculate that and what do you roughly charge? Yeah.
So that's sort of two questions. Well, maybe more. No, I don't have a minimum fee. I have considered it over the years, and a lot of florists that I know do have a minimum. Because I am sort of a hybrid and I do retail and everyday deliveries as well as weddings and events, any of that extra product tends to be what we sell as our everyday design work after a wedding. So I've got that ability to do that. But my friend that doesn't do Mother's Day, she's just events. And so she has to order a lot tighter than I do because she doesn't want that leftover because she has nowhere for it to go. She does have a minimum, and I want to say it's around $3,000 right now, maybe $3,500. For me personally, what I tend to do is get their wish list and their style and price it out, get a budget request from them, which generally doesn't match, and then contact them and call and talk them through the options and find out if that budget is realistic, if they have any wiggle room. And if they don't, and what they want, you know, if they don't have a place where they can move, either bring down some of their wishes or bring their budget up, then I'm not the florist for them. I probably 10 years ago decided I was not going to try and meet every single budget request and every single wish list request at the same time. And my stress levels went from here to way down here. It just isn't feasible to try and meet both of those goals at the same time. And so what I do has been figure out exactly what it's going to cost them and then give them options.
Yeah.
I basically sell the way I like to shop. So for me, I want information. I want to know what my options are. I want to know what it's going to change if I take something away or if I keep it. And so I provide those things to my clients as well. Let's see. The other question was for delivery. Mm-hmm. I, for my events, base my delivery charge and my setup charge on mileage, gas prices, how many people I need to take with us, and how long I feel like we'll be on site setting up. So I have set up a spreadsheet where I can plug in how many miles away it is and how long we'll be on site. And it gives me a number, and then I round it up to like 525 instead of 518.
Right.
But yeah, I figure it on all of those things because I have to maintain my vehicles and I have to pay my employees, and I really want to get paid for working on a Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Did you say 525? Like, did you just throw that number out, or is that kind of average?
Yeah. For a 2-hour setup, it can range with myself and one assistant. It can range anywhere from 500 up to about 800. If I'm bringing extra people or if I need to be there longer. Most of our setups are not too far away. They're within 30 minutes drive. So we're not spending a lot of time just travel.
Right, right. A couple other questions popping up about, this is a really good one also from Laurel. How do you handle brides who want to keep the flowers after the event? With the vases you use for wedding design, do you let brides keep them or charge extra for those, or do you charge a retainer fee if vases are broken? She's struggling with that. And so it sounds like the difference is, are you renting the vases or are you selling them as part of the design? Sure. And how do you handle that?
And before I answer that, I think I missed one of your questions as well. I've actually never had a minimum on my orders, mostly again, because I don't want to shop that way.
And when you first started, your minimum was probably like whatever they'll pay.
Yes, it really was. I've never had a minimum because I don't want to shop that way. And that's always been how I tend to run my business, is how it makes sense for me. If I were the customer, what would I want? And so that is how I tend to make those decisions.
Well, also just to follow up on that, mm-hmm. if you're building profitability into every piece going out the door, then Even a small wedding is going to be profitable because it'll capture your labor and in your staff and whatever. So maybe that's why you haven't felt the need to build, to create that threshold that some people are also think that's how they make their profit.
Right. It's not about that. It's each piece is profitable. Each event is profitable. Multiple events are profitable. And sometimes the bigger events are less profitable because you have so much extra you have to bring in, like extra freelancers, extra vehicles, and you end up with a lot of little expenses that you don't normally account for. And so it eats into your profitability if you're not super careful.
Good point.
So that covered the minimums, which I don't do. And then the next question was, can you repeat that question?
The question about the vases. How do you handle the vases? Okay. Yeah.
I've done a couple of things over the years. When I started, I had requested a credit card on file. So a sort of a deposit guarantee. The big thing for me is I'm a morning person. I am not an evening person. And I really don't like doing strikes. So I have generic pieces that are easy to replace, and I give them the option of paying a strike fee, which you should do no matter what, because it is a service that you're offering. But mine's not cheap because I have to stay up late, or they can bring the rental items back to me within a week. And it's in the contract that if they don't, or if they're in bad condition, broken, dirty, whatever, then there might be a fee for that. Most of my clients love that and are happy to save the strike fee and bring them back within a day or two. I've lost a couple of vases, and it's generally breakage, which you're going to have over the, here and there every once in a while. And most of the time I don't charge them for that. If it's just one vase that breaks or disappears, these are generic. They are not something special that are super hard to replace. So it's just part of doing business. Mm-hmm. Okay. If it is a specialty item that I had to order or it's super pricey, I will include the strike. It's just, this is part of your contract and it has to happen. Like with our arches, I'm not going to ask them to break down an arch and bring it back. But most of our vases and things like that, I let them bring them back to me.
Okay. Laurel, add a follow-up question if that didn't exactly cover what you were asking, because you said you're struggling with it. Holly has a question about what organizing platform are you using, like the one she gave us, HoneyBook. She's curious about these for helping streamline processes. Currently, she's using Google Sheets and Google Forms for organizing and gathering info, which of course is free, but maybe, and I know there's sort of these specialized platforms that people are using.
Yes, that's a hard one. What I use is a program called Dubsado that handles my client-facing information. So it handles the proposals I send out, the contracts, the invoices. They can pay online through that as well. I use Notion to keep track of all of my project details. So it is a program where I can drop in PDFs of my recipes. I can put in pictures from the proposal. I can put in pictures that the brides and grooms send me. I can put notes in there. I can track my accounting in there. So it's a pretty flexible program. It's not a great one if you don't like being on the computer, because it's almost too flexible a lot of times. Mm. But it is a way to track. And I use Google Drive just to keep everything. So every project gets a folder in there. I drop everything in and then I put it in Notion so I can see it in one place. I can pull it up on my phone. For my everyday orders, I used to use FloorNext. I ran into some issues that just rubbed me the wrong way. And so I built my own in Airtable. Airtable is another good one if you like to work with the data on the back end, or if you have somebody that can set it up for you. Project management in general, I think you really have to figure out a program that works with how your brain works. So some things are really great out of the box if your brain works that way. You need that structure of, this is how you set this up, the checklist, this is the structure that the program gives you. Some brains need more flexibility. Some people need pen and paper. They need to have it physically in front of them so that they can see it, post it. I'm not a post-it person. I've got four here and it's driving me crazy that they are up on my computer right now. Are
you one of those people who likes an empty inbox, Althea?
Yes.
Oh, you would really hate my desk.
That doesn't mean that everything is very tidy and organized. I have piles. I have places. Everything has a place, but that place may be a pile. Yeah. But every project gets a folder. It's blinking in and out. A manila folder.
Yeah.
Because that way I'm not trying to find loose papers all the time.
Yeah.
So you have to find something that works for your brain and the way that you think and organize naturally. And if you don't find that match, it's absolutely not going to work for you.
Okay.
I have friends that have used TinyBook. I have clients that have used TinyBook and things like that. I think it can be a little overly structured. It doesn't always work for the way that weddings actually happen. It also, I think, is more front-facing, client-facing. It doesn't help with the back-end organization. So you almost need two programs to do that. Hmm.
So I put the link for Dubsado, and I know a couple other Slow Flowers members who use that. So if anyone's interested in following up with someone who's using it, contact Althea or reach out to me and I can connect you. What was the other one that you mentioned that you use? I'll put that link in too.
It's Notion, notion.so. Also with Dubsado, I do have an affiliate link just because I've been using them since they started, basically. And I'm pretty sure it's Dahlia, D-A-H-L-I-A.
Oh,
which will get you like a free month.
Like free trial or something?
I think they do one paid month and then your second month is free.
Wonderful.
I think is how that is. That might be how every STEM does hers.
I mean, it's smart in that if someone wants to just kick the tires a little bit, they don't have to come in.
Yeah. And if you have any questions about it, reach out to me. I'm happy to show you how I have mine set up on Dubsado. EveryStem is great for creating recipes. If you don't need it, it doesn't have a lot of fluff. So it's just making your recipe. It's a little easier than doing a spreadsheet because it puts all the items together from your full event or your full Mother's Day. So you're not having to go in and do the math there.
Okay, good. I'll put that link in too. Mm-hmm. One other question that just popped up from Laurel. What type of marketing, I mean, this is a very broad question, but what type of marketing have you found successful in connecting with your ideal client? And I know you've got buckets of clients, but maybe you could talk about a few of the things. Before we got on, Althea confessed to me that sometimes she lets her team members do the social media. So
Yes. Social media is probably my least favorite thing personally. I would much rather do the accounting, pretty much anything else, take out the trash even, than work with social media. So there are lots of times that I don't look at social media for a week at a time. I will work out the calendar and say, this is what we need to market for. They will send me something and say, how's this look? And I'll say, yes, no. And then they post it. I don't do it because I'm not good at it. And it just stresses me out. It makes me anxious. It makes me depressed. It's not good for me to do social media. But marketing in general, it is a tough one and it is very, very difficult. Networking, if you're doing events, networking, knowing the other vendors in your area is huge. That has been the most helpful. Your website really showing you and not being very generic. So if you look at my website, you'll see there are lots of pages and pages of information. Again, I like information when I'm shopping. I don't want to just see your pretty pictures that I don't know if you actually did those.
I'm going to pop your website up while we're talking because it is. I was going to show the wedding,
earlier. But yeah, if you go to the wedding page, it's long. It's got lots of information there. Because that's who I am. When I talk, I give out lots and lots of information. All the pictures are done by other people. Again, my team works on the pictures and the blogs and things like that. I put together the website, but you can tell there's a lot of information here. It's not a page that's just a portfolio of pictures. And my clients, that's what they want too. They want to have that information. They like being able to do the research before they ever talk to me. They don't necessarily want to meet face-to-face. They like doing either Zoom or a lot of them that I'm doing now. We talk on the phone once and everything else is email.
Wow.
So this is my questionnaire that they get before they ever get a quote from me. So it's pretty detailed and I can, that plus the pictures, I can get a very accurate estimate before I ever talk to them now.
Wow.
But yeah, knowing your vendors and having vendors that refer you and know your work is probably the most helpful thing. And then having your own website. So social media is great for sort of a touch point and having, you know, having some legitimacy. But if that is the only thing you have, it sort of works against you. You need a website that definitely shows your work and your styles to really promote yourself. Yeah, there's a lot of information on my website, a whole lot.
This is under About Us. So there's where you're saying, oh, by the way, it drives me crazy when people don't put their last name under their bio. And so congratulations for putting your first and last name. I think that's really important. So you describe, you know, your personal story, where the name came from, and then your team, which is really sweet, just because they're often interacting with the clients.
Yes.
Of course, you have to have pets on there.
Absolutely.
Everybody knows that. But that's just one example. I'd like this one also, working with us, where you are kind of trying to anticipate some of the, you know, selling points, the unique propositions that you want people to know about, you know, for investing in you, because it is the biggest floral purchase anyone has. And weddings, it sounds like weddings are really associated with your brand in your marketplace.
Weddings were where I started, and I still love weddings, but I don't like doing all weddings all the time.
Yeah. These are your niches
right here. I really love
doing
corporate work now. Yeah. And the everyday work is a nice break. So like I said, we have about 35% in each of those areas now.
Wow. That's great.
And there you are.
Oh, great. Yeah. I'm so glad. I'm so glad that you could do this. This is really helpful. Let's see. We have maybe time for one more question, and I think we'll wrap up. So I will ask it, unless there's anyone else who wants to just jump in the chat and type it. I think that I'm really thrilled that you offered to donate a 1-hour coaching to somebody who came today. So we'll do that drawing next week and match you all up. But when you do start with somebody who has just reached out to you, I mean, obviously there's a pain point. People get to a point of either fear or frustration, or they're stuck. And like, what is the type of incident that will like prompt someone to reach out to you? It's sort of like calling a therapist, right? Some crisis
really
moment. Yeah.
What I have found is that the best match are people that have been in the business or own their own, not necessarily in the business, but own their own business for somewhere between 3 and 7 years, long enough to have tried to do it themselves, long enough to realize that social media isn't for them or accounting isn't for them, sort of figure out what it is that they really hate doing or really struggle with, and reach the point where they're ready to not do it all themselves. And that is the big thing. I talk to a lot of people that are just starting out, but they almost never work with me one-on-one because they're still in the mindset of, I want to, I can do it all myself. I'm going to learn it all. I did the same thing when I started out. That's where I was. But then I realized, no, this isn't a good thing. And I actually started working with business coaches and business training and things like that. And then I realized, you know, I'm just never going to be good at social media. So I've learned to let it go.
There are people who can do that.
My area. It's people that have been in the business 3 to 7 years or own their own business, I really should say, because you may have been in the business as a designer for another shop or freelanced for somebody else, and then decided to open your own. And that is where it is the most helpful. I do work with people that have been in the business much longer than that, but that tends to be more, can you help me set this specific system up, rather than I just need a coach.
Yeah. Like with that 3 to 7 year window is sort of where you can come in with this bird's eye view, look at the whole organization and do some diagnosis. Whereas later in their careers, maybe it's item specific or challenge specific. Yeah. Great. Well, this has been wonderful. I guess I have to close by asking you the origin of the name Rose of Sharon. I know you have it on your website, but do people call you Sharon?
All the time. Also, Aletha, Alethea, Athena. Yes. So Althea is the Latin name for Rose of Sharon, or it used to be. I think they actually changed the scientific name for Rose of Sharon in the last few decades.
Oh, darn it.
But when I was born, many, many years ago, Althea was the Latin name for Rose of Sharon. My parents were hippies. I got the flower name as the oldest child. They had a nursery. And then when I decided to open a shop, because of that connection, it was always that the shop was going to be Rose of Sharon. Since then, I have learned that most people don't know that. They either think of the Bible verse or the Grateful Dead song.
But we see the beautiful illustration on the backdrop behind you, and we all know what that is. That's a great story. Thank you so much, Althea. This has been really, really inspiring, and I'm grateful for everyone who's could participated, added their questions, and we'll have this as a replay video and audio. We're going to run this as a podcast next month. Thank you all so much. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next month. Take care.
Thank you Bye-bye. For having me.
Bye. Thanks, Althea. That was really wonderful. Thanks so much for joining me today. Please visit slowflowerspodcast.com for episode 661 to watch the replay video of Althea's presentation, along with links to all the resources she shared. Our next thank you goes to the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, a farmer-owned cooperative committed to providing the very best the Pacific Northwest has to offer in cut flowers, foliage, and plants. The Growers Market's mission is to foster a vibrant marketplace that sustains local flower farms and provides top-quality products and services to the local floral industry. Visit them at seattlewholesalegrowersmarket.com. So today you heard from one of our members who shared her expertise at the April Slow Flowers member meetup. And now I want to give you a heads up about the next member meetup coming right up on Friday, May 17th, postponed by 1 week to accommodate Mother's Day. The upcoming session is devoted to designing with dried flowers, and our expert member is Hannah Rose Muller of Full Belly Farm. This is the topic of Hannah's brand new book out on June 4th, Designing with Dried Flowers. We're so excited to feature her as she talks about flower farming with her family in Northern California and developing her special approach to drying flowers she grows and her design projects. This will be a very special preview of the book, so bring your questions about dried flowers. We will have one copy of the book to give away to one lucky attendee. Pre-registration is required, and you can find the link to register in our show notes. I'll see you on May 17th. Our next thank you goes to Longfield Gardens, which provides home gardeners with high-quality flower bulbs and perennials. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Check out the full catalog at Longfield Gardens. That's longfield-gardens.com. I'm so glad you joined us today. The Slow Flowers Podcast is a member-supported endeavor, downloaded more than 1 million times by listeners like you. Thank you for listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. As our movement gains more supporters and more passionate participants who believe in the importance of our domestic cut flower industry, the momentum is contagious. I know you feel it too. If you're new to our weekly show or our long-running podcast, check out all of our resources at slowflowerssociety.com. I'm Deborah Prinzing, host and producer of The Slow Flowers Show and The Slow Flowers Podcast. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Brinlin. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more slow flowers on the table, one stem, one vase at a time. Thanks so much for joining us today, and I'll see you next week.